They can be a great people, Kal-El. They wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all, this reason, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to issue 49 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that keeps killing off its sidekicks. I'm Richard Gray.
I'm Dave McVeigh.
And joining us once again in the studio is our good friend David Longo of DamnGoodCup.com. How are you, Dave?
Hi, guys. Very good. Thanks for having me back.
Welcome back.
Welcome
good
back.
Good to be here again.
This time I was at least pre-warned.
Actually, I'm a little bit surprised that I am back. So.
The truth is you never left. You've been sitting under the desk for 2 weeks.
We kept him tied up under the desk.
We will have you back. Last week was our highest rating show.
We can only go downhill from now, right?
I thought you were going to say something entirely different there for a second, so we'll move on.
Well, that escalated quickly. In this issue, the Guardians and Nova are finally here, but Robin... But Robin has made himself scarce.
Oh.
Then Marvel comes to Disney Parks, Hawkeye sees the signs, and Hulk and X-Men movie news. Plus, our kick-ass pick of the week, The New Dead Wardians by Dan Abnett.
That's it.
Bloody awful show, that. Dan Abnett and I.N.J. Culbud. This is Behind the Panels, of course. Once again, for those of you who didn't tune in last week, we have two Davids in the room. So
standing rule will stand. He is Dave. I am David.
Exactly right. So just in case you're tuning in, I'm still Richard. So
and just to make things really confusing, next week we'll be calling each other by color.
Yes.
I'll be Mr. Pink, you'll be Mr. Brown.
Can I be Mr.
Why
Brown?
Why am I Mr. Brown?
Why am I Mr. Pink? Is what I want to know.
Do we have an explicit tag?
The fact that you went there first is fine by me, David. You know,
I already have a Mr. Black.
Hey, man, it's all the same love. You know,
I don't know. Sometimes I wonder if we should carry an explicit tag. He was talking about like Black Mambos last week. No, Black Mamba last week.
I was talking about Black Mambas. You took it to a dark place.
But don't worry.
Not literally, but you took it there.
I have this massive rant about Mendigo fighting coming up, so just get one.
Well, I think it's time we slip into a very strange vintage clip of the week. And I'm going to preface this by saying I had never heard of this before I found the clip. Once I did find it, I wanted to use the entire 95 minutes of the thing as a vintage clip. Couldn't do it.
That would have been the whole show.
That would have been the whole show. I've got about 2 minutes of it here, a little longer than usual, but I think you'll see why once I start playing it.
I discovered the Black Mass cult soon after my arrival in Boston, and I overheard their plan to present a bride to Satan. It was my chance for revenge. On the night appointed for the offering, I hastened to the Church of Satan's disciples. My plan was simple and cruel. I would steal Satan's bride and destroy her. Then I saw you, and all my plans were forgotten. As you knelt before me in obedient submission and your eyes met mine, I knew I must have you for my own. My need for you overwhelmed my need for revenge. With one bite, I could give you immortality, and you would be mine for all eternity. But a strange force gripped me and would not let me carry out my purpose. What is this power? Only now do I realize what that force was. I, the Prince of Vampires, the Lord Sovereign of the Damned, had fallen in love with a mortal woman. Now I behold the result. A beloved son, Janus. My frozen heart burns like a torch. Love and joy were just words describing long-forgotten emotions until I found you and regained my ability to feel them.
I too had lost my humanity. That's why I offered myself to be Satan's bride. I had felt unloved and unwanted all my life until that moment our eyes met. You opened a whole new world to me simply by caring and by showing me that you cared. You made me feel alive and special. When we were together, you never took your eyes off me. And when we talked, you spoke to me, not at me. And you cared what I thought. No woman could ever feel more loved, more cherished than you have made me feel every moment we've been together. Such a man could not possibly be all evil. I know how you suffer, my darling. My heart suffers with you. that our love is worth suffering for.
Oh, my love.
Darling.
Fifty Shades of Transylvania?
Still better than anything. Still better than anything in Twilight.
Where do you find those wonderful clips?
Oh my darling!
Now that clip, I wanted to include the whole thing because this is from something called Dracula, Sovereign of the Damned. Now the lineage of this is quite interesting. It was based on the old Tomb of Dracula comic book series.
Oh, really?
And those of you not familiar with the Tomb of Dracula series was a Marvel comic that ran throughout the 70s.
And
mostly.
A very prestigious thing because it was actually what with gave birth to Blade.
Blade. But of course, that was the original vampire, Dracula. And but it was actually made as an anime television movie in 1980, where it was known as Dracula, I'm translating, Dracula the Vampire Emperor of Darkness. Not Dracula, the most honourable vampire emperor of darkness. But it was dubbed quite badly in 1983 by Harmony Gold into English under the title Dracula, Sovereign of the Damned.
Oh, that's why it sounds so stilted. It's
it
dubbed.
Sounds so. So you should. I wanted to include all of the opening narration to this thing, and maybe one day later, if we ever do another vampire book, I might include the opening narration all to right. this thing because it's very precise. The opening, Dracula arrived in. Town,
it sounded almost vaguely like the original series to Dark Shadows. Yes. If you've ever seen the original series Dark Shadows, it starts with like these opening monologues and it's all very highly dramatic and, and it sounds just like that. And I'm really surprised to find out this is 1980 because it sounds like something out of the 60s.
But I mean, look, you know, ladies, men, that's how you got to behave to get a woman to kneel before you in submission, was it?
Yeah, I was going
to
say 50 Shades of Transylvania, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff was hot. Oh, so wow, that was my vintage clip. For
that
the week.
Is pretty cool. I got to say, every now and again, you surprise more often than not, you surprise us.
I was trying to find something Edwardian this week because we're doing or something.
I say.
Yeah, I say. I was even, you know, even Victorian would have done me. I was trying to look for something, you know, like Batman meets, you know, Sherlock Holmes or something, and I couldn't quite find anything. But then I thought, I'll go with Vampire Spin instead. So
I'd like to know how long you actually spend looking for those.
7 hours.
Yeah. 95. Did you listen to the whole 95 minutes?
No. I watched about the first 20 minutes of this. This comes in, you know, about... sure, I've watched enough of it to want to throw my monitor across the room, but it was... I think I might go home and watch the whole thing now to see if any more kneeling and submission happens.
I'm going to go watch it now. I got it here.
Now, because I forgot to do this last time I was here, let's have a bit of this.
Where? Looks like we got ourselves a reader. Read between the lines, bitch.
Although I did put it in last week.
You did put it in, so if you probably
it feels kind of awkwardly fit in there.
Yeah. It's sort of like halfway through a... this is the what we've been reading and indeed what we've been watching section. Now, what we've been reading is pretty exciting.
Let me guess before you start, though. The what we've been watching will be Arrow and the Walking Dead, right?
Yeah, look, I don't want to labour too much about this. I mean, this is going to be a far more interesting section come next US fall, because we'll add S.H.I.E.L.D. to that next as well. Maybe we should start adding a few of the cartoons in there as well.
We might have to, I think, because television is starting to become very limited to two series.
So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's not a lot of superhero TV. I mean, you know, some movies will be coming out and all those sorts of things.
We'll wait for the movie season as well.
Well, there's some pretty good, like, the DC animated movies coming out.
Yeah.
They're going to do Flashpoint.
Flashpoint.
Are they turning Flashpoint into a...
Apparently that's next, yeah.
Well, oh, yeah.
Kevin Conroy's actually said that he's recorded it.
All right. Good stuff.
That'll be awesome. Which means that they can make a whole 52 new DC animated movies.
Oh, God. I'm going to fall off my
chair. How do they cancel them, though?
Well, that's true. They'll cancel half the movies.
Maybe they just animate them halfway.
I think what'll happen is the characters will just disappear out of the show. Yeah.
And they'll send them over to the Earth 2 of the movies. Yeah. Now, what we've been reading in the last couple of weeks is pretty much being dominated by two or three major events happening. Now, over at Marvel, there's been the Marvel Cosmic Universe is back. Both Nova number 1 and Guardians of the Galaxy Point One has been released. And Point One is an origin story. But look, Nova number 1, I really, really dug. It's not it's not your daddy's Nova.
No.
So this is not Richard Rider. This is not...
And I have to say, I do miss Richard Rider.
I suspect, but he disappeared in the Thanos Imperium, didn't he? Yeah. He got stuck in the cancer. Quill. Yeah, so...
Yeah, the two of them together.
I suspect either in the pages of Guardians of the Galaxy or... Indeed, in the pages of Nova, we'll find out about what happened to him.
It's going to have to be in Guardians.
You know, it'll have to be in Guardians because we've got to find out how the
Peter,
Guardians
how
came
Peter
back.
Quill is back, exactly.
And all that sort of stuff. So we're very, very excited that's back. But I really, really like Nova because I think it's fun, it's lighthearted. And I said to my little, if you go to behindthepanels.net, I did a little capture review for it. And I said, it's a little bit like Ultimate Spider-Man in space almost because it's that sort of almost going back to... the origins of what makes all these superheroes great in the first place. It's a kid struggling with all this stuff, suddenly got these powers and, you know...
It's got some interesting room to grow as well because it's not the same Nova either in the sense that we now have the black helmets versus the gold helmets and they're introducing all sorts of new stuff into this. So I think Nova's got a long way to go and I'm looking forward to it. And let's face it, spoilers in this show and everything, the last panel... Let's just say it now.
Look, spoilers if you haven't read it, but I mean, because they appear not in the last panel, they appear before then as well.
Yeah, but it's that last panel's the important one.
But Gamora and Rocket Raccoon make a cameo in this issue. Wonderful cameo. And then they pop up in the last thing. And the next, I've seen a few preview pages of issue two, which is Sam slowly blinking back into consciousness. And it's like a slither of a panel, empty hospital room, another slither of a panel, and then it's Rocket Raccoon's face suddenly in front of him. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Rocket. But of course, on the other side of that, what did you guys think of Nova as well?
I thought it was pretty interesting, like comparing Nova to Guardians of the Galaxy .1.
Have you read the full Nova series from before?
Yes, absolutely. I've read pretty much the whole Dan Abnett, Andy Lanning run.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Good. Yeah.
And from Annihilation all the way through
huge
to
fans
the
in this room. Yeah. So
and it's a very, very, very different tone.
It's more, you know.
Effectively, they're rebooting the cosmic universe, but like everything with Marvel now, they're rebooting it, but with the continuity in place. So,
but that's what I found strange about Nova, particularly, because it doesn't give you, especially the fans that have been following the character for a long time, it's like there's nothing really
I think that connection will come once he gets
to space. I think they really wanted to introduce Nova as a brand new concept and distinguish him not only from what's gone before, but from... you know, Green Lantern as well. Because I think a lot of people coming to Nova now will see him as a Green Lantern ripoff.
Yeah.
Which, let's face it, sure, he kind of like, always
is,
was.
But also I think that it's interesting that his father, who was established Nova Corps, I think that's the first time we meet him as well. I don't think he's been introduced before.
I don't think so.
I think it's Jesse Alexander, I think, is his father. Yeah. I don't think we've seen him before. And I looked him up and I think his first appearance is Nova 1. Sam Alexander, we have actually seen on page a couple of times before. We saw him during Marvel .1, not Marvel Now .1, but Marvel .1, which was a previous one they did a year before last. It was a short story featuring him as Nova. And also we saw him during Avengers versus X-Men, issue 12, and he just turned up in that. And also in Marvel Now .1, there was a little story in there, which unlike Guardians of the Galaxy .1, the little bit in there was a completely different story. It was with him fighting another character and, you know, finding out his powers are kind of cool after all. So that sort of set somewhere after Nova 1 because Nova 1 is very much an origin story of Nova.
And I guess Guardians .1 is an origin story too.
Well, Guardians .1 is interesting. We were actually discussing Guardians .1 in the car on the way over here. Richard and I were having a chat about it because it's really interesting because there is a gap in time. Now, those who have read Guardians of the Galaxy in the past, I mean, that's a complete story. It's all finished. Mm-hmm. This is now basically rebooting Guardians. But keeping a continuity, we've still got the same characters in here. But if you notice that .1 issue is all about his backstory, which has kind of been retconned a little bit. But then we have that jump in time. So we basically go from him telling the story to the last panel, which is, spoilers and all, which is where Tony Stark is there on the ship. And he says, so that's the story. Do you want to join us? Mm-hmm. And he says, yes.
He's like, I'm in.
He says, I'm in. But we have a gap now. So from where he is on Earth in .1 to where he gets to meeting Stark, that's a whole body of story in there to tell.
And if you look closely, and I'm pretty sure this is the case, it looked to me like Rocket Raccoon had like a metallic leg. So
I have to look that back.
So if you've got it there in front of you, it looks like he's got one metallic. So I think there's a whole lot of backstory of stuff that has happened between. I could be wrong, but that's what it looked like to me, and I had to look at it a couple of times.
There was one thing that kind of got me a little bit worried about it, you know. But I shouldn't be worried because I have a feeling it's going to be amazing. But it's that the stories were so similar with Guardians Point One and
Nova. They're just silver boots. Mm. They're silver boots.
Oh, the silver boots? Okay. I thought he had a metallic. Like,
no, I'm looking at the silver boots.
That's all right then. I was going to say, well, there's a whole other backstory right there. But but I suspect, I mean, there's a lot that's happened. They've all gone and got new uniforms at some stage. I mean, the very fact that Peter Quill is back.
Well, and the point that you made, though, which was that Gamora and Rocket were in original costumes in Nova, and now they're in new costumes in Guardians. Absolutely. So there is time between those two events.
They are boots, yeah. Sorry, I thought that was one metal leg and one real leg, but they are boots.
Yeah, they're part of the new costume.
Yeah, now that we can zoom in on the digital version, because I actually read it in print.
Right.
So, yes.
But yeah, I was just going to say, the only thing I don't want to see is the same origin story for everyone, where they have a parent who they're not getting along with a child. Did you notice
that the first three pages of Nova and the first three pages of Guardians, are the same?
It's got the solar eclipse or something like that.
Yeah. So it's...
But let me just say that the one thing that Guardians has got standing head and shoulders over Nova, in fact, is Bendis' writing.
Well,
he's fantastic.
Bendis' writing is fantastic, but Jeff Loeb's no slouch either.
He's
on his A game.
But Bendis handles dialogue like no one else.
Look, you know, I'm really looking for now that Bendis... Yeah.
Dialogue in those was amazing.
Fantastic.
Yeah. We don't want to labor too much on this, but when he wrote that originally as a 10-pager for that Marvel Now Point One, but the story was, he was so compelled by the character of Quill that he ended up writing this 28-page book, which is basically an origin story for one character.
Yeah.
Which I think is going to be a very important character, because so far he's the only person they've cast for the Guardians of the Galaxy film.
And can I just say, just as a just quick side note, this is not related to these guys, but let me just say, as credit to Bendis's writing, the Avengers Assemble, which I was finally getting into... I'm finding hard to read now. I mean, literally, it's lost that edge that Bendis brings to it. There are moments in his Avengers run, both New Avengers and in Avengers Assemble, which would actually make me guffaw out loud.
Is it true the Guardians appeared in Avengers Assemble?
Yes. Yeah. There's a three or four issue arc where they turned up, and they hint in there that something happened, you know, something brought them back from the Cancerverse at the end of Thanos Imperative. Because I think one of the characters actually says to them something about the Cancerverse. I can't remember exactly what it is. And Peter just gives him this look. And that's all it is.
Well, do you guys remember the end of the Thanos Imperative? Like, you know how they got the cube there? And they established earlier on that Thanos can, you know, he can't die. He can come back from the dead. So maybe it's got something to do with coming back from the dead and the cube and...
Because Thanos is back too in that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Thanos has to come back.
Actually, one of the things that I thought I'd bring up very quickly, which I thought was very interesting, something else I read this last fortnight, was the new Avengers.
Yes.
Which is all Illuminati stuff. And when they formed, they've actually put together the Infinity Gauntlet again. And there's one page which has basically got, they pull the gems together to the Infinity Gauntlet, and suddenly we cut to Galactus turning, Thanos turning. It's like everybody suddenly detects that this gauntlet has been put back together, and suddenly we just opened up the entire Marvel Cosmic Universe in one hit. You know?
And then it all breaks, doesn't it?
Yeah, the glove breaks. Yeah. The gauntlet
the
shatters.
Gems go shattered.
We're building up to, there is a series happening middle of this year in May. There's the free comic book day book. I mentioned this last show. It's called Infinity.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, and the cover to that is the glove. So it's all building up to another Infinity War style thing.
Yeah, look, I'm really
very,
jazzed.
Very exciting year to be reading Marvel. I think we better move along.
Hell to the
quickly, some of the other stuff we've been reading. DC, their big new titles in the last couple of weeks have been Justice League of America as opposed to Justice League, as well as Justice League of America's Vibe.
Okay, before we get to Vibe, what were our opinions of Justice League of America?
Okay, well, Justice League International is the book that it's replacing. And we always had a problem with Justice League International because it didn't have any heavy hitters in it.
And now, can I just say that I have the same problems?
Now, this book was released with all the excitement that 53 variant covers will bring a book. 53 variant covers, one for every state of America, plus a couple of ones and a sketch cover and all that sort of shit. Now, the team is Green Arrow, Captain...
Martian Manhunter.
Yeah, exactly.
Where's he been?
Green Arrow, Hawkman.
Exactly.
Stargirl, Baz the Green Lantern. And brand new character, Vibe, who they're pushing so hard that they also brought out a standalone ongoing series. cool vibe. Now, this is the problem with everything that's happened in the New 52. It's like, rather than doing what they used to do, it's like having an ongoing series, introducing a character if he was popular, releasing a series based on the character. It's like, nope, let's start an ongoing series with this new character right now and cancel it in 3 months. You know, it's yeah. You, no, this won't last.
I'll put money down. The vibe will be.
I'll give it 6.
I'm going to give it tops 6 issues.
Yeah. And it was awful.
Because nobody cares.
My note here for all of you is, as you've just said, is it vibe? Why should I care? You can see it. I've already written that down. And the thing is, even with Justice League of America number one, the concept is good. Bringing together a team that could take down the Justice League if they have to. I don't seriously believe that any of those people could take down anybody.
The only person in that team that has a chance of doing any sort of damage at all would be John Jones.
So Martian Manhunter, the inclusion of Catwoman is bizarre. Stargirl might have some possibilities there. And look, you know, I mean,
except they've recreated the character to be
Green Lantern.
Bimbo.
Green Lantern, of course, could take down some people.
Well, yeah, but Baz hasn't really gotten
his
ring
yet. But Vibe is just a ridiculous character. But most of this issue is like that old motif of two people standing in a boardroom going, well, here are some files. And it's like, that has been done so many times.
And it's been done in the New 52. Amanda Waller, how many issues have we seen Amanda Waller sitting behind a desk handing manila folders to people?
Yeah.
You know, throughout this entire
thing. I love it too. Don't you love it? It's like, want to join? No. Yeah. Want to join? No. Want to join?
Sure. Right. Okay. We've seen it in Suicide Squad. We've seen it in Team 7. We've seen it in Justice League International. We've seen it in Justice League of America. I'm really tired of this. I'm really tired of the Amanda Waller character.
Because this was almost, read like a zero issue. This was not the debut issue of a book. There's barely any action in it. There's no superheroes in it. There's barely any story to speak of. It's just a really slow moving thing. I mean, look, issue two might pick up. Geoff Johns has said now that he's leaving Lantern, he's going to concentrate on his Justice League stuff, and I hope so. Because this is not a horrible start, but it's not.
In other words, what you do when you have a flailing series, Justice League, is you fix the flailing series by creating series that are even worse, so it makes the first series look better.
Yeah. There is nothing. I think this is a point we were getting to just before, and we'll talk about this a bit more in the next episode when we're doing our spectacular run. 50th episode spectacular, that the DC New 52 was a magnificent concept to start with because it got us all reading comics again in a major way. It started this show. But now I want my DC universe back.
Yeah.
I want to start reading just good stories with those characters.
Do you guys still have faith in it reverting back?
I do.
Yeah.
I've said that on this show a few times. I actually really truly believe Infinity War.
Trinity War.
Trinity War. We'll actually restore the
And
DC
there's a bit
universe.
Of news coming up about that. They've announced a new, DC's announced a new title coming up soon, which will probably start
I think the New 52 has, I truly believe it was a massive marketing campaign. Mm-hmm. And it was very effective. It got a lot of people reading comic books again, and now they're going to swing it right back again.
Okay, now we...
And if you think about it, Richard, like the ones that came out most successful, like Batman...
They the ones that held onto
continuity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they never had to. And they've got their get out of jail free card with Batman because there's the letter.
All Flash has to do is get back onto that conveyor belt that he uses and wind it back. You know, it's like.
Except there'll be a crisis because he's eaten too many pies and he just can't move quite as fast as he is.
I think we're going to see. And I think what they'll do is they'll take the best elements of the New 52 and roll those into the original. They'll combine the two together. We'll get our original continuity back. We'll keep the good elements, the things that have happened in Batman, the things that have happened in Green Lantern, as an example, and even some of the stuff that's happened in Justice League. There's some really good stuff early on in Justice League. Roll that into the DC continuity as it stands. Bring back a lot of the continuity. Bring back. We've already read something online. I don't know how much credence there is. There's no second source so far, but there was an article with Amanda Connor online that I read recently, and somebody asked her whether or not she would ever come back to Power Girl, and she said, you know, she'd be more than willing to come back to Power Girl. She loved Power Girl, and they said, and they're really disappointed that Power Girl doesn't have her original costume, and she said, oh, she's getting that back. So she let something slip that Power Girl is going back into her original costume. So I think there's inner workings of DC, and I think if you
recently there was a change up in the a lot of the department. They're
Yeah,
a lot of job positions.
And Jeff Johns is, Jeff Johns has been made in charge of the film and television division. So basically, he wrote.
And if you want to be an East Coast assistant editor, I think that job's still up for grabs. Apparently,
did you see?
I want
the
old 52.
Yeah.
Did you notice that the last episode of Arrow was written by Jeff Johns?
Yes.
You know, so, and it was a really well written episode.
That was a good episode.
Fantastic episode. And so you sit there and you look at it and go, they are aiming their universe to go into cinema.
Mm-hmm.
To go into cinema, they need to bring back some of the elements that people are familiar with. Otherwise, it'll never fly.
Yeah,
no. You know what I mean?
And, okay, look, let's just move along very quickly because there's one major oxygen-sucking issue that came out this week, which you haven't read yet, David.
I'm ashamed to say I haven't read it yet, but then again, I was never a huge fan.
Yeah, no, but Dave and I have read it because it kind of had to happen. Batman Incorporated, number eight. Now, this is Grant Morrison's book, which is, as David said, it is a book that's been easy to ignore if you're not a Grant Morrison fan, because it's never sat with the rest of the stuff that's happening with
Scott
Snyder.
But that's the kind of thing, if you've been reading Grant Morrison's Batman run prior to the New 52, then that's kind of your established continuity. Yes. So, like in my case, I don't know if it's yours, but, you know, we stuck to Incorporated because we'd been reading it. Yeah.
Yeah, and look, the thing is, let's say spoilers and all, it's been everywhere in the news.
We can't spoil it. It's been on the headlines of newspapers.
You can check out my website, Daniel Cup, to see a huge rant about this.
There you go. Yeah. Robin is dead. Well, the latest Robin is dead. Damian has been killed off. Damian was Grant Morrison's creation. He was the son, effectively, of Talia al Ghul and Bruce Wayne. Originally designed to bring the two of them together so they could rule the world together as the ultimate man and woman.
And offspring.
And Batman always, you know, possibly saw, you know, Damien as a means of replacing him and all this stuff, which is sort of where the story comes down to. Effectively, there's another clone. Another person who is like Damien, being genetically engineered, a big, very Talon-esque
hulking
kind
figure.
Hulking figure. Long story short, while Batman's while Batman's off doing some other stuff, Damien,
he's locked in a safe.
Underwater. Damien gets a sword through him, and
A 100 arrows.
After 100 arrows, and there's a big fight. There was a magnificent moment in this. Dave and I were talking about this before. There's a where Nightwing and Damien team up, and Damien slash Robin says to Nightwing,
something along the lines of, "We were the best Batman and Robin, weren't we?" Yes, we were.
And they have this big Butch Cassidy moment where they leap over the table and off they go off to fight this guy,
and then almost instantly,
it's in a series of like really close, punchy panels where there's like, you just see Damien, it's both of them trying to take this guy down. Nightwing's knocked down. Damien goes in for a harder hit, and he's stabbed through the stomach, straight through the middle with a giant sword. As far as Grant Morrison's telling us, that is. Oh, here we go. You've got it in front of us here. It's a great finale.
Well, according to an interview that Grant Morrison did recently with Kevin Smith, he talks about the fact that his plan was always to have Damien killed. And in fact, he actually says that it was originally supposed to be only a 4-issue arc.
Yeah.
And then Damien was supposed to be killed off. Of course, Damien's lasted a lot longer than that. But Grant Morrison has said publicly a few times that he's reached the end of his Capes era. Mm. He's going on to do his own stuff. So obviously, he's taking his bat and ball and going home.
Well, what's really interesting about this is that...
Picking up his toys.
Yeah. Well, you said to me, David, on the way over here that what was interesting about this, we all assumed a major character would die during Scott Snyder's run.
Yes.
And this was the double bluff, and this was quietly slipped in and said, "Hey, actually, we're killing him off over here."
And Grant Morrison actually addresses that. He says that everybody thought the Joker would be the one to do it, and that wasn't the case at all. So,
And what's interesting is that they've just now released all the real covers for next month's Bat titles, and they're all to do with...
My question is, what happens to the comic Batman and Robin?
I want to say something. I want to call something.
Mm.
In Batman, in the mythology...
The Lazarus Pit?
The Lazarus Pit.
Yeah, no,
someone dies, where do they go? And who's the mother?
Yeah.
Talia. So...
Who's the grandfather? Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, yeah, no, that was my first.
Will Grant Morrison stand in them bringing him back?
Well, I don't think it'll be under Grant Morrison. The thing is, I don't know if it'll happen in the next few issues, but I think if they ever wanted to bring him back, DC's got the out.
Yeah,
you know,
well, DC's those, always got an out. Well, actually, like they've got even bigger out. The whole universe looks like it's going to revert back soon. Yeah. So.
Sorry, Richard, to interrupt. Like, no, what I'd like to see here done is for Grant Morrison just to conclude it.
Yeah,
just to wrap up how he feels Batman should end, kind of give us a Dark Knight Returns. Yeah, continuity and, on his side. Like,
so
that's the ending. So the big question, we finish that story, and Scott Snyder goes and takes.
Well, exactly.
Off,
so the big question is next month: do we have a Batman and Robin title, and do we have a Batman Incorporated title?
We've got one, but it's just I don't know what's happening in it.
Yeah, so I mean, that's this is the big question. Now.
Well, I think you know
we definitely have another one of Batman Incorporated coming.
Yeah, definitely. It says to be continued at the end of this issue. So, interesting thing what happens. We have spent a little too long on this. Let's not talk too much about Arrow Walking Dead this week, because we're going
to
do some.
I don't think we really need to. With the exception of the fact that
Arrow was magnificent this week, and
Arrow was great. Walking Dead, I haven't
still
watched
treading
yet, so.
Water.
Yeah, I haven't watched it.
So
there you go.
I don't know what's going to be in it.
Look, I do recommend watching this week's Arrow though, because it's got some really pivotal moments in it. With reveals
lots
and so
of
forth.
Reveals.
So do watch that. And,
at least two or three major reveals. In this.
And in a couple of weeks, we'll actually talk about it, because we don't like to spoil television anyway. So come back to us in a couple of weeks and we'll talk about those reveals.
Exactly right. We'll definitely do, when the season's over, we'll do a season.
Oh, yeah. And we're going to do, we are going to do that Walking Dead thing at the end of the season as well. So.
But for now.
What a scoop!
Loud?
That was very loud. But it was indeed a scoop. Look, just going to mention quickly at the top of this, as we did last time, Oz Comic Con is coming up in April, at least in Perth and Adelaide. Oz Comic Con is one of Australia's bigger comics conventions. No affiliation, as far as I know, to the American Comic Cons. A lot of the news actually coming out this week from the States is from the ECCC, which is the Emerald City Comic Con. Lots of Comic Cons happening out there.
Yeah.
But look, Perth, OzComicCon.com is where you'll find out all the information. There's Perth Exhibition Centre on the 9th and 10th of March, Adelaide Showgrounds on the 16th and 17th of March, and then later in Melbourne on the 6th and 7th of July. The confirmed guests include people like William Shatner and Richard Dean Anderson. You've got a whole lot of...
What is Richard Dean Anderson doing nowadays?
Look, appearing at Comic-Cons. you've got people like Patricia
William
Quinn.
William Shatner.
You've got Matthew Clark. You've got Eddie McClintock. You've got people from Deep Space Nine. You've got Tia Carrera's turning up. So, look, you know, this could be a bit of fun for geeks everywhere, particularly if you're in Perth and Adelaide. We should be doing a few interviews, particularly with comic creators around that time, including Andrew Constant is one of the people that we've asked for, and Nicola Scott is one person that we hope to get around then as well. Either way, we'll be talking about this more closer to the date. OzComicCon.com, check it out for everything that you need.
Hey, I noticed that Jason Momoa is going to be here. I wonder if he'll drop any bombshells about Guardians.
Guardians, yeah. No, that'll be quite interesting. Ooh. Or, I mean, I think most of the thing he'll be plugging will be Season 3 of Game of Thrones. I mean, he's not in it. Of course he's not.
No.
So maybe he'll be a flashback scene with him.
Sorry, spoilers for Season 1.
I just realised that. Yeah, for Season 1. I'm just thinking, yeah, because the last thing I saw him in was the thing he died in.
If you haven't watched it already,
yeah, it was wrong with you.
That's true. But that's something I'm very excited about.
Akbar is going to be there.
Oh,
that's a trap.
No, it's a trap.
It's a trap.
Okay, but moving on to the real news.
The real news.
The real news. Actually, no, the non-promotional news. Now, this week, Disney bought Marvel. So it's only a matter of time before...
What?
Yeah, I know.
Did they?
No, not this week. A while ago. Disney bought Marvel. So it was only a matter of time before...
What are you telling me to scroll?
You've got this article in front of me. You're not lining it up to the bit that has the story in it.
Oh, this is it. This is what loaded.
Yeah. Just scroll.
Sorry, we're experiencing technical difficulties. I'm scrolled. That's
it. David's just got this article in front of me. He's just scrolling it up.
That's it. What are you looking for?
Looking for the Marvel news in there, dude.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, it was only a matter of time before... Next one down. It was only a matter of time before Marvel came to the parks. It doesn't seem to be there. Anyway,
no, it's not there. See, it's not my fault.
It's not your fault. Look, it was only a matter of time before Marvel came to Disney parks. Now, the one park that has been struggling for quite some time is Hong Kong Disneyland, and I've been there twice. You can do it in half a day. It's got literally six rides, and that's about it. They've just opened up a few new lands, and I haven't been there since they've done that. But they're going to be the first Disneyland that's going to have... Oops, sorry. They're going to be the first Disneyland that actually has a dedicated Marvel land in it. So that'll be interesting because hopefully they'll roll it out.
A long way to travel to go to a Disney dedicated Marvel land.
Yeah, exactly.
Depends on how cool it is.
This is really interesting because they haven't done it in any of the US ones yet, I think, because Universal have had all their Marvel stuff there. And there's a whole mess of right stuff tangled up there as well. But they can do it in their international parks. Because there's no, you know, anti-competition stuff there as well. So it'll be interesting to see what they pull out.
And don't give us just rides that are red and say, that's the Spider-Man ride.
No, look,
you know, this do something cool.
This is Disney, so you know when they put in a ride, it's going to be like, Imagineers are going to be all over this shit. They've been sitting there since they first got the Marvel characters going, you know what we could do?
We want full-size robotic animatronic Sentinels.
Yeah. This is what's going to happen.
I want to go into the danger room.
You hold on to the top of the plane. You get frozen in ice for 40 years. then we thaw you out in the future.
Hey, it's not
and you
rushes.
Become Captain America. That's what the ride will be in Disney. So
I want a ride where you go into that little machine and it injects you with the Vita rays.
You come out with adamantium skeletons.
And then I have Hayley Atwell touch my chest and go, ooh.
Here we go. This is the actual thing from the press release. Disney rep said, we shall submit a funding proposal to the finance committee in the next few months, because in Hong Kong everything has to go through this finance committee, because Hong Kong Disneyland is actually jointly funded by the Hong Kong government. It's a weird situation. In the coming few years, Hong Kong Disneyland will launch a new nighttime parade, but put in place a themed area featuring Marvel heroes, the first of its kind in the world. So very, very exciting. The other bit of news that's just coming out of the ECCC, which is the Emerald City Comic Con, is exactly what we were just talking about, which is a new series called Trinity of Sin, Pandora.
Cool.
This is going to be written, I was going to say Guy Fawkes, but it's Ray Fawkes, joined by Daniel Sampera.
We've been waiting for this for a year.
So it's coming out in June, and it's going to complement Phantom Stranger.
Now, the one thing I have a fear about this, so
which
Richard
needs
is,
compliment.
I don't think anyone's ever complimented Phantom.
Yeah.
How many issues?
Maybe Dan Didio, man.
How many issues?
Every time I'm on, I'm going to slam
Dan Didio.
Damn you, Dan.
How many issues is this going to be, and how many comics is it going to tie into to make us read this?
Yeah, exactly right. Like, I mean, look, if this is, I suspect that this will be the point where it all starts coming together.
It's taken them 17 issues to get
But here. this is my problem with the newish 52. Is that here we are.
The not so new 52.
Here we are 17 issues in and
we're still calling it new. That's
we're calling it
problem.
New and we're still pretending like this is the status quo and we all know that's not the case.
Yeah.
Let's just start planting the seeds for destruction.
Can I just bring this, float this to the surface and say that I have a problem with the term the new 52 because A, there aren't 52 books anymore and B, they're not new. So why are we still calling it the new 52?
At what point does it become just the 52?
The not so new 35.
The like, newish 50 something.
Yeah.
Newish 40 something.
What if they get to like 52 issues, like 52 months in?
Yeah.
Then what are they going
to? I'm going to shoot myself. If I have to put up with this for another 52 months, I'm going
to
shoot myself.
Well, we'll be another 52 months, but I think we'll have to put up with it for another couple of years. I'm not sticking around that long. Because meanwhile, Marvel Now is showing us how it's done.
Yeah.
I just like this story. This is this was announced at the ECCC as well. Matt Fraction, who has been doing amazing things not only on FF and Fantastic Four, but on Hawkeye. Hawkeye, his issue 11, which is not that far away. Is that it's well, apparently issue 11 will have pizza dog solving a crime. Pizza is my business. But they're also going to have an issue which is going to be in sign language.
Yes. And what? How's that for us?
I'm not sure.
Is it going to be in dual? Is it bilingual or is it just going to be in sign language?
I don't know. But the character of Hawkeye was apparently originally 80% deaf. But his hearing recovered, according to this Bleeding Cool article, his hearing was recovered due to some kind of reboot or other. But, you never know. We could revert back to that. He could develop deafness. The great thing about the Hawkeye title is that it has been very much about him out of costume.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah.
This is what I'm really loving
and
about
all these
it.
Things that appear to be gimmicks are not when you read it.
No.
Like, I mean, yeah, did you guys read the recent Hawkeye that came out this week?
The love story kind of one?
With the Pulp Fiction kind of covers for it. Like, you're going, like, this is gimmicky. And then at the end, you're like, wow.
But then, and then the comic titles actually tie into a major plot point and that.
We need to stress this again and again and again because I still hear it. I've actually heard it a few times now in just the last couple of weeks. We would go, Hawkeye sounds stupid. Read this comic. This is, out of all of the monthly comics out at the moment, this is must read. This is genius. He's taken a substandard C-class hero
and made it just an
and
a,
basically
an
said
A-book.
Take him out of costume and make him about setting up his VCR or running an apartment building or whatever it might be. It is genius. It is so well written, so well drawn. This is great
stuff. As good as Wade's Daredevil.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's basically one of the two best things being written at
Marvel. Oh, it's genius.
At the
moment, so.
I think
that
once they put it out in trade, it's just going to go.
Yeah,
it's going to explode.
From issue weight. So
from the really stylized, simplistic covers to the really simple art,
the artwork is gorgeous.
It's just gorgeous. This book is just a joy to read. And you read it, and you sit there and go, and you know what? I think he is. I can quite honestly say I don't think he's ever put the Hawkeye costume on. He's grabbed his bow. I don't think he's ever put the costume on.
Yeah, from memory.
In this book.
Right, yeah.
He's been dragged off into things, but like when Hydra took him away and that thing. But I don't think he's ever actually put the costume on.
Volume 1 is coming out as a trade at the end of March, March 26th, followed by Volume 2 in July. So
this is must read. So in fact, I think we're going to have to cover this.
Yeah. I would say that Hawkeye is one of those books that I look forward to the most.
Yeah,
every month.
Let's make a deal. When that trade comes out, we make that the book of the week.
Okay, so early April sometime we'll be doing Hawkeye. Excellent. Well, in the meantime, let's have a bit of this. Not a lot of movie news this week.
Did I tell you that Arrow this week was really good?
Actually, there's been little bits and pieces. Ain't It Cool News posted some stuff about the Hulk movie plans. Now, apparently that whole Planet Hulk, World War Hulk rumor about being a movie is not true.
Damn. Made me sad.
Well, yes and no. I mean, at least not in the immediate future. The long and the short of the story is that Mark Ruffalo is a big part of the future Hulk plans, certainly in Avengers 2 and any standalone Hulk movies they really want to use. Ruffalo as Banner.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Because as this article points out, after two false starts with Banner, Marvel is thrilled with Ruffalo, and the last thing they want to do is reduce the Ruffaloage.
Yeah.
In
Ruffaloage.
Ruffaloage. You've got to make sure you're getting your Ruffaloage in your diet.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because you've got to make sure you keep your fiber up.
Makes you deliver a nice big Hulk.
Yes. I'm waiting for that issue where Hulk gets constipated.
That would be a grumpy Hulk.
What would happen if Hulk like ate a whole lot of stuff and then turned back into Bruce Banner?
Reed Richards will just send him into space.
Race, yeah.
Before he destroys the planet.
Now, it's really interesting because I think that Hulk has a good movie in him. Because there's certainly plenty of good Hulk comic book
stories. I'm not going to completely write off Incredible Hulk, though. I quite liked Incredible Hulk.
No, it's quite good, but wasn't quite there. And unfortunately, because that's Edward Norton, I'm almost prone to forget it.
It's the same thing with the Eric Banner Hulk, with the Ang Lee one.
The what?
The Ang Lee Hulk.
Huh? What?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like it's a good movie, Dave, but it's not a Hulk movie.
No, it's not a good
Dave,
movie.
Dave, you wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
That's my joke.
I know, I stole it from you.
I like that. All right. No, look, the Ang Lee Hulk, I think, was a really
footnote, I stole that from Dave's Facebook page.
I really think the Ang Lee Hulk was a failed experiment. I think that it was Industrial Light and Magic trying to come up with a character to beat Gollum. In digital six, and it was Ang Lee trying to make an art film out of Pulp Fiction.
Yes.
And it failed on almost every level.
It's not a bad film.
I just find it irritating.
I haven't seen it for
I don't
a long
hate
time.
It. And actually, bits
it's
of
not,
it.
It's just not a Hulk movie.
Bits of it are laughable, but it's still I like what he tried to do with the style, but I don't think he pulled it off.
No, and then I think that the second Hulk, the Incredible Hulk, I think brought it back to comic books. It brought it back to the Marvel world.
What do you guys think of the Hulk film, the second one?
I like the second one. I thought the second one was good. We brought in the Abomination. We brought in Hulk doing. He wasn't astronomically huge. He was he was the Hulk, and it was. Mm. I think that scene in the University Park where the Jeeps come in with the sonic guns. That's a great sequence. I really quite liked the Incredible Hulk. I think we got the Hulk clap, yeah, the gamma clap, yeah, you know.
And we got Hulk smash,
and we got Hulk smash, absolutely. And I think
did
overall
Hulk speak in the Ang Lee one.
Yeah, he said, no, I think it was in the mirror. Remember, there's that one where he says puny human or something like that. Yeah.
Some cheap kind of fan service.
Yeah, exactly. And so I quite liked it, but absolutely, hands down, Ruffalo's Hulk is the one.
And
to
Ruffalo's
go with.
Banner, more importantly.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think what we need is we now need Incredible Hulk 2. We don't need to reboot it again. We just need Incredible Hulk 2, but just replace
Ruffalo.
Put Ruffalo.
Yeah.
This feels like it won't happen, though, Planet Hulk. Just because of just Disney and John Carter, that doesn't
I don't
look
think,
like they will want to make the...
Really worried that Guardians is going to flop because Disney hasn't had a lot of success with cosmic stuff. That said, they have a vested interest in making cosmic stuff work for them because they've just bought Lucasfilm.
Exactly.
So, and Guardians is going to be a pivotal point. Marvel are doing everything they can to make Guardians a household name at this
and
point.
And it's such like a here and now kind of time for the visual effects industry. You know, with the
Let's also not forget.
I'll try not to remember.
That. Thank you. But we mentioned, by the way, that both Richard and I are sick.
Yeah.
so we're doing well. Let's not forget that when Iron Man was being prepped outside of the comic book world, and there's a lot of comic geeks go, no, Iron Man's so important. He's always been an Avenger. Outside of the comic book world, nobody knew who Iron Man was.
No one cared.
He didn't even really have, like, beyond the cartoons of the 60s and 70s, he didn't really have his own thing.
No,
like, people knew who Hulk was because he'd had the 70s TV series.
And
people,
in fact, there was
people knew Spider-Man for the same reasons and all that sort
Empire
of stuff.
Empire Magazine sent out a reporter to the set of Iron Man. It was a really interesting article way back when it was first coming out. And the reporter actually starts the story by saying when they were in the car, basically going out to the set, the driver of the car said, so what are you doing? He goes, I'm going out to interview Robert Downey Jr. on the set of Iron Man. And the driver said, what's that? And he said at that point he realized that there was no public awareness of this character. And yet Marvel turned it into a household name.
And if you look at Iron Man, the making of that, let's cast it well and let's execute the hell out of it. And so if James Gunn does that for Guardians, we're good, I think.
With the exception of the problems we've just mentioned with Incredible Hulk, Marvel have executed this flawlessly so far. And certainly now that they're under Disney... They've
and I actually do not doubt for a second that had Ang Lee's Hulk not already kind of sullied the way, Incredible Hulk would have been a much bigger hit. The world has much more knowledge of Hulk than they had of Iron Man
from
because of the TV series. So a lot of people knew what the Hulk was, and if you had just delivered that Hulk film, people would have gone nuts for it. A lot of people did not go see the Hulk film because they said, oh, I saw that other one.
Yeah.
And it was garbage. Majority of people didn't like it. You know what I mean? And so I think that had the Incredible Hulk was fighting an uphill battle. And for to do the business it did was extraordinary. And now with Ruffalo's Hulk, I think we could make a blockbuster.
Oh, hell yeah.
Speaking of blockbusters.
Because everyone's favorite part of the Avengers. Sorry, Richard. Exactly. Everyone's favorite part of the Avengers is Hulk.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was like, to me, that was just, it turned in that moment where Hulk punches the dad. All the visual humor, all the visual humor in that stuff comes from the Hulk and that great, great, you know, fan service moment where he says, like, the secret is I'm always angry, and then turns to the Hulk. That's great, great stuff.
Correct me if I'm wrong, though, but wasn't there something about Guillermo del Toro?
I think the problem there is that Guillermo del Toro is attached to it, and it will never get off the ground. I think we're all going to be stunned when Pacific Rim hits theaters. Speaking of blockbusters, one final bit of news we'll mention before we have to move on, because we've already been talking for almost 50 minutes, is X-Men Days of Future Past, which looks to be one of the biggest blockbuster superhero movies ever. By combining
the biggest disaster of all time.
Halle Berry looks like she's confirmed basically that she's almost certainly going to return in Days of Future Past, which is great because Storm's part of that.
Yep.
We've already confirmed.
Is this, I can't remember because it's been a long time since I've read this. Is this Mohawk Storm or is this Full Head of Hair Storm?
I'll have to have a look.
I'll have to look at that one. I'll look it up later.
We've already got the cast of X-Men First Class.
Yep.
We've got Patrick Stewart. We've got Ian McKellen. We've got Hugh Jackman returning. We've got Sean Ashmore. We've got Anna Paquin. We've got Ellen Page returning. There's still rumors that Alan Cumming and Famke Janssen will come back for it. Because if you're going to do Days of Future Past, you're going to have Jean Grey.
Yep.
But Ellen Page in there is fantastic because Kitty Pryde is essential.
And look, Ellen Page was not the problem with X-Men 3.
No. It was everything else. It was Brett Ratner.
I thought she was actually a really good Kitty Pryde.
Yeah, it was a shame that that movie wasn't good because we would have gotten a fourth X-Men movie, I think, a lot sooner.
But that's what I love about Singer's attitude going into this. He's been saying lately that his main goal is to fix X-Men 3. Mm. And by that, he means, like, bring everybody who died.
Well, this is not only a sequel to X-Men First Class, but the revival that... It's X-Men 4.
So the question is this. If this film is successful, do we then have two X-Men franchises running from 20th Century Fox?
We've already got two running at the moment because we've got the Wolverine as a separate series.
So do we have three X-Men series?
And there's also the rumors that there's going to be that Deadpool movie as well.
That's never going to happen.
Yeah, so but I mean, yeah, there's, yeah, I'd like to see it happen.
We've been talking about it for, 3 years now?
At least, yeah. But yes, I reckon it's entirely possible.
And which Mystique are we having? Are we having both Mystiques?
I'm not entirely
sure. We definitely
sure
have Jennifer.
I don't know if she's confirmed.
Oh, okay.
So let's just wait and see. But there's rumours. There's this article that we've linked to said that Rebecca Romijn will come back for this as well. So
be interesting if we had both of them.
It would be interesting.
That would be an interesting turn of events.
Yeah, well, we're probably going to have two
I
Professor
thought Rebecca
X's
Romijn was a better Mystique anyway.
I did too. Jennifer Lawrence is a lot of things.
Academy Award winning
Jennifer Lawrence. Academy Award winning, but slightly, but not exactly sure-footed as a mountain goat because she fell up the stairs to collect her Academy Award. But anyway, another movie I'm very, very, very excited about. David, it's sort of come to that time of the show where it's time for you to pipe in the girl from Ipanema.
Oh, wait a minute, I got to find the girl from Ipanema.
Because it is, of course, our feedback section. Our first bit of feedback comes from Steve Clark, who says, "Hi, guys." Hi, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
I've been listening to you guys since the podcast started, and it's 49 issues now, Steve. And you're pretty much the reason I got back into comics. Any chance you could review a Johannes Vasquez book? I'm thinking Johnny the Homicidal Maniac or Squee! or a Sam Keith. I'm thinking the Max. Yes, I'm thinking about the Max as well. These were the only comics I ever read pre-BTP, which is behind the panels. And they fit in with
BTP.
BTP. And they fit in with the owner-artist idea that you were talking about last episode. Yeah, it is something that we'd like to do. And in regards to Sam Keith, we're actually thinking of doing something along the lines of Batman Through the Looking Glass. A friend of mine recently said she read it, and we might even get her on to talk about it.
Cool.
So you can have a lady girl on here as well, because we haven't had one of those.
Ooh, that'd be like a comic book shop when the door opens and a girl walks in and everybody stops.
There was that tripod song, Girl in a Comic Shop. we should play on that episode if she comes on. The other bit of it was definitely, Steve, we definitely want to do those. Johnny the Homicidal Maniac, I've read about, I've never read, so I'd like to do that. As you see, we've been avoiding capes for a while, so we're going to get into some capes, but I think it'll be back to a few of those offbeat ones after we do that. So certainly well noted, and we'll talk a bit more about that in the future. The other bit of feedback we've had is from Matthew Katusiak, or Matthew K.
Hello, Matthew.
Another long-time listener, not first-time caller.
Of BDP.
Who just simply asked... he doesn't say hi, he just gets straight to the point. Says
Matt often does.
Can you please review the Dark Phoenix saga? I read it last year and it was fantastic, smiley face. P.S. How is the Geek Actually reboot going? Okay, now there's two questions there to answer. Now the first
I was
part,
afraid this was going to come up.
Now, the for the first part of the Dark Phoenix saga, David and I spoke about this and said, yes, we're going to do it. But we're not going to just do the Dark Phoenix saga. We thought, well, the Dark Phoenix saga is a bunch of issues in the middle of the Uncanny X-Men. To really get the most out of it, you have to read the Phoenix saga. And so you're going back to Uncanny X-Men 100. To really get the most out of Uncanny X-Men 100, you have to kind of start from where Chris Claremont, John Byrne run started, which is Uncanny X-Men number 94. So what we're going to do at some stage in the next couple of months is Uncanny X-Men 94 through to 142, which pretty much covers
everything from the minute she pops out of the water, as Phoenix.
Well, it covers, well, basically, it was effectively the Marvel Now of its day, because it kind of rebooted the X-Men for a new generation.
I actually recently read X-Men Giant Size.
That was where it started.
And basically, for those who haven't read it, and why that's such a pivotal issue, is because the original X-Men are indisposed, and Xavier throws out basically a psychic calling card and pulls together Wolverine, Colossus, blah, blah, and it's the birth of the new X-Men.
And it's the X-Men that we've effectively come to know and love as the core X-Men over the years.
Storm is in there.
So we go from that giant size X-Men number one and Uncanny X-Men 94 all the way through to 142, which is where Days of Future Past ends. So it's going to be
a
big read, but I think it all kind of fits together so nicely. We couldn't pull one out. So, yes, you're getting your wish and a whole lot more, too. Yeah. So
that's going to be in 3 weeks?
3 weeks. We've got our 50th episode spectacular next issue. Following that, the plan is, unless it all goes pear-shaped, we're going to go back to a weekly format.
Mm.
Depending on how everything goes. That's the aim anyway. Then we'll be doing The Deep, which is a great little Australian comic. Then we'll be looking at that X-Men. Yep. We might do Happy.
Happy's in there. Sorry, yes.
We'll
so
do
the
Happy.
Deep,
Happy. Grant Morrison's Happy. And then the Uncanny X-Men.
So you've
run.
Got 4 weeks if we go weekly.
Mm-hmm.
Or 8 weeks, effectively, if we stay fortnightly. But let's say 4 weeks at this point.
Yeah.
4 weeks to read up on X-Men.
Man. So that's a lot of issues to read. They're all available in trades. Go out and read. They're also available if you get onto that sort of Marvel archive thing online.
Yep.
All on there. So just go and check it. Again, Comixology, all through there as well. So many, many places to find it. Get reading. It's a long read.
Now, to answer the second question. Now, this hasn't actually been made official yet, so it's going to be kind of hard to answer this entirely, but at this point in time...
Slowly.
there's a bunch of issues at hand, and so we are kind of just pushing off on Bury the Lead and the Geek Movie Club at this point, or the reboots of those shows. Stay tuned. We will make announcements as they come up, but at this point in time, we have kind of delayed them a little bit more down the track because it's time concerns and a whole bunch of other things. So just bear with us. Any news on that front will always be on facebook.com/geekactually or geekactually.com and probably also facebook.com/behindthepanels. Mm-hmm. So these are our sites for finding this information out. We will keep people, I know we haven't been keeping people in the loop, but we will make announcements as they come up.
So that's been another feedback section. As David just mentioned, if you've got any feedback of your own, facebook.com/behindthepanels is where both of those came from. Also feedback@behindthepanels.net. They're the places you can reach us. Also, you can hit us up.
Did I say .com before? It's .net, isn't
.net,
it?
Yeah. So you can hit us up on our Twitter as well, which we'll mention at the end of the show.
Yeah, behindthepanels.com is not us.
It's not. It's somebody else who I'm sure are doing a great job, but they're not us. Now, we're almost an hour into this thing, so I think before we get carried away again, let's hit up a little bit of this.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
Another book that's
I just heard the Simpsons game kick in.
Yeah, we're all on playing Simpsons Stat Dad here as well.
Let me just turn the sound down on my iPad.
Our kick-ass pick of the week this week is, of course, The New Dead Wardians by Dan Abnett and I.N.J. Culbard. I think his name's Ian Culbard. Inge. Now, normally this is the point where we'd talk a little bit about what the book is about, but I actually went and found on Dan Abnett's official YouTube channel him talking a little bit about the book and introducing the world. So let Dan do a bit of the talking for us.
New Dead Audience, if you don't know what it is about, it's an 8-issue limited series. We're hoping it does well enough for a sort of season 2 to come along. It's a detective story, it's a police procedural, it's a costume drama, and it's a horror story. All of those things at once. Set in 1910 in England in an alternate universe, as it were, where there has been a zombie apocalypse in the 1860s, which has transformed the British Empire, and in order to keep the zombies at bay, the upper classes have been forced to become vampires. So it's Downton Abbey meets The Walking Dead, really. That's the elevator pitch. But it's a costume drama. It's a character study. the main character, Inspector Suttle. He's the last homicide detective in Scotland Yard. The series doesn't ever mention zombies as zombies or vampires by vampires. We don't use those words, but quite clearly they have had to take upon themselves some of the qualities of one type of the undead in order to be invisible to another type of the undead. And it's stratified London on a class basis and done all sorts of very weird things to society. And Suttle, who is a vampire, he's one of the, what they call the young, that is to say, he's undead. They don't live as vampires. They don't wear capes and go around turning into bats and biting people on the neck. They keep their teeth filed. They try and eat and sleep and carry around their normal lives, stoically enduring being undead in order to keep society together. And he's called in to investigate a murder. One of the young, one of the vampires, has been murdered, not by any traditional means of executing a vampire. And he's got to work out who this guy is and why he's been killed and how he's been killed and all this kind of stuff. And that's the plot. That's the case that he.
So, I don't think we could have summed it up.
No, he just laid it out there, yeah. Didn't he? That was it.
I think he took us to issue three, I think.
About that. So you don't need to read it anymore. Thank you very much.
So what the book's about is... it's a very, as you implied there, it's very much about British society as well. It's about the class war.
Very much so.
And also about the suffragette movement as well. So much about the British class movement. And I just love this. This is in the first issue, and this is when I first loved this book, when I bought the first issue, just from the title alone. I love the title of something called The New Deadwardians. This is where Suttle's gone into headquarters and one of his superiors has come in, and this is just after one of his housekeepers has been eaten by one of the zombies. The restless. It's so typically British, this conversation they have, and it's, "George, you're in. I heard you had a spot of bother. Zone B incursion. Everything's dealt with, sir, but my housekeeper was killed. Oh, bloody bad luck. There's a staffing agency on Newport Road. First class, they are. Tell them Chief Superintendent Carstairs sent you. They'll see to you very well. Thank you, sir. Bloody awful thing to happen." It literally was, sir.
The whole book reads like, if you've ever seen Monty Python and the Meaning of Life, there's that one part in the middle where it's like, "Oh, it seems like a tiger's taking my leg." It's like, "Oh, rather."
You guys should do a reading of it. We should put one on iTunes.
Do issue. Bloody bad luck.
The new seems to have taken me leg.
How would you read the diary entries?
I'll read them as Rorschach. Let's just pull out a diary entry now. 47, let's just do this.
Chatty Row. London, Zone A, October 12th, 1910, 5:01 a.m. Tire track tread on stomach. No, sorry. Remarks continued. I have not slept a wink. Not a wink. The whole night has been a dark, silent weight upon me. Like every night.
I love the fact that they keep referring in this book all the way through it as they had the cure. And the cure was to turn them into vampires. But I love the fact...
So I keep expecting the love cats to jump out in. Robert Smith's just there.
It's like, we took this cure for the betterment of the... It's like, no, you took this cure so that you could keep
your status.
That's right. You know, it's like, you didn't give it to everybody. And of course, we've got the Brights, who are the normal humans. And they've been basically corralled off into their own area.
What's the other one? The young.
There's the young for the vampires, the bright for the humans, and the restless for the zombies.
And effectively, you've got kind of the lower classes are effectively the restless. Yeah. The middle, the working classes are
the brights,
and the upper class and the aristocracy are all the young.
And it seems like every woman is a prostitute.
There's prostitutes who, like, you know, literally cater to all the cravings.
And
of
I love the fact that they have to keep the teeth. Because all the young file their teeth down, so they have these fake teeth that they give them so that they can have a little chew on the prostitutes, but not enough to actually give them the cure. Mm-hmm.
But while he's searching for the killer of the first murder, it's a young has been murdered, and not through the three traditional ways, not through beheading, stake through the heart,
or burning,
which is... Important safety tip if you're ever tapped by a vampire, just be aware of that.
I also love the fact, before you go on, I also love the fact that they talk about crucifixes in churches. Mm. And they say that if you are a God-fearing person,
they
don't affect you. Yeah. But if you believe that you are damned, they will affect you.
And I really
that's straight out of Stephen King from Salem's Lot.
It's also in the original Fright Night. If you remember in the original Fright Night, He holds up a cross and says, yeah, you have to have faith for them to work. No,
Yeah.
I'm a huge Stephen King fan, and for there's a huge part of it in Salem's Lot.
Mm. Yeah, and all I like about it is it doesn't take any one particular bit of vampire lore or zombie lore. And as I said, it doesn't really call them zombies, but the best zombie things never call them zombies.
No.
I don't think George Romero mentioned the word zombies once in any of those films.
They were just the undead.
Dead, yeah, and they're walkers in The Walking Dead or roamers or something, depending on whether you're from Woodbury. Woodbury, woo! I love that. There's that one. So just a little sidebar. I love there's that one scene in a recent episode of The Walking Dead where it's like Angela's there G-ing everybody up.
Yes.
And like they're all going, yeah, yeah. There's one guy at the back.
Yeah, it was the Independence Day speech.
Yeah, yeah. There's one guy right at the back. He's going, Woodbury.
You go, Andrea.
USA. but back to merry old England. Look, very, very British book, and I do like that this is done. Tried to do something different with not only the zombie genre, but with the vampires genre as well, because both are very hot right now.
As far as this book is concerned, I actually really like the writing. I thought the writing was really clever, and I love the dialogue.
Well, Abnett can do no wrong.
Abnett is fantastic, and the dialogue is fantastic. Now, I'm not a huge fan of the artwork in this book. We've had this discussion before the show as well. Richard knows this. I'm a fan of hyper-realistic, and I like good, sharp artwork. And it's a little bit too cartoonified for me.
And I don't mind that so much.
But you don't mind that, and that's the thing.
Neither do I.
No, exactly. So
I thought this was actually quite nice.
So
I like the colouring.
It's just the line art.
The first thing that struck me, it's an odd comparison, but I couldn't help it when I was reading it, that I related this to like Mike Mignola's artwork
in a strange way.
Just because he does these usages of lighting, which couldn't be replicated in real life.
Exactly, yeah. And I think that's
you never see that often.
Yeah, no, and particularly some of these scenes, you've got a few pages open here when you've got this real contrast between the greyish-bluish slate of the civilization and this real red-hot, fiery damnation. Next thing. I like Mignola's use of color as well.
I also really like the fact that the Restless never really play a part in this. We see a little bit at the beginning because his housekeeper gets killed, and he stands at the fences sometimes and looks at them, or we have these flashes of when he was in the war, basically what led to all this. But they don't come in.
And you actually, there's a Zone B incursion because the city's been split into Zone A and Zone B. And Zone B are where all the roamers are, the Restless are. And walkers, aim for the head, where all the rest of us are. And then you hear about that.
But you never see
off
it.
Off page, but you don't see it.
Yeah. It makes me think that Volume 2 will probably have a lot more to do with that. Mm. Because this is just, it really is just a police procedural.
Yeah.
But I think it's a bit more deceptive too. I found this to be very academic. Like there's a lot of metaphor and allegory in it.
Oh, yeah.
It's it's almost Sherlock Holmes.
It is very much like
Scotland Yard, and
it's a Edwardian instead of Victorian.
But I think in terms of a story, I don't know if the plot is as good as the ideas in there. The world building is like certainly amazing.
It's all
the vocabulary we just talked about now.
The dialogue is spectacular.
But if you think about what we just did, like we rattled off like several terms with like real ease.
Mm.
You know, like we were able to really retain that.
Mm.
And that's like a mark of like really, really strong world building.
And I think,
but in terms of like the revelations and things like that, I don't know if it's
not
too
strong.
You know,
we've all read this in the trade format or as a complete set, rather. We've read it straight through.
Yeah.
But it was originally released, DC Vertigo, as 8 issues. Now, I think it's probably 1 or 2 issues too long.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. In terms of what you were saying is that some of the plot points and revelations, they could have tied that up a little bit earlier.
Although, that being said, 8 issues, it's a fast read.
It is. Look, I
read it. It's impressive, 2 hours.
I read it. Exactly. Yeah. So it's It's certainly never sluggish, but he probably could have. I mean, I don't know whether it was always going to be 8 issues. He said this was his first book for Vertigo, and he said in almost 30 years of writing comics, he's never written for Vertigo before, so that was a first for him. I do hope we get a second volume, as you said, simply because of what Dave said about the world building. I think it'd be great.
I think there's more to say in this world, too.
Yeah. And because one of the things that's really interesting about this book we haven't touched on yet is that Subtle is slowly regaining his humanity throughout this as well. Josephine, yeah. He meets a prostitute named Josephine.
Sapphire. Where'd Josephine come from? Sapphire.
That was the prostitute you went to, David.
That's right.
That's where he got the recommendation.
Sapphire.
Not tonight.
Yeah, Sapphire.
He meets Sapphire, and through her, because she constantly...
and she's a great character.
She's a great character, and she constantly teases him and tries to draw out. And that's another Holmesian thing. There's another... There's always a character like that in a Holmes sort of thing. You know, you've got your stiff upper lip.
There's a Watson in here as well.
Absolutely. He's got a regular police guy who drives him around.
Well, Sapphire is the character, basically, in the Holmes mythology of what's her name, who was played by
Rachel McAdams
in the movie. What's her name again?
I'm not the biggest Sherlock Holmes.
I've forgotten.
Who can match wits with him and blah. Yeah. And as soon as she meets him, she starts to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, with the young, they've lost all human pleasures, whether it's eating or drinking or sex. And
I love this idea that the second that you choose to live forever is when you die. I think there's something great about that. Yeah,
because and they constantly make references to that throughout it as well, about the idea of, well, when did he die? Well, originally.
Yeah.
But it's and how can you get, and the whole question is it murder if they're already dead? And that sort of thing.
I'm trying to find it while we're talking. There's actually a great passage that I remember from this book. They're at a dinner table, and there's a great line in here. I'm almost there. I'm looking for it, digging through here, where they're sitting at a dinner table, and where is it? It's right here. Oh, here it is. I think I found it. And it's where.
Is this simply a temporary repair for the British Empire? Is that the
No, here it is. Where he's talking to the woman at the dinner table and he says, "What the bright really don't understand, Lady Cecilia, is that it is an appetite which gives their lives purpose.
Yes.
It's the hunger to learn and grow and live that drives them on. When you take the cure, it takes your appetite away. Mm. So the very point of living disappears at the precise moment that you're given an endless slice of lifetime to use up." She says, "Isn't that called irony, Inspector?" And he says, "No, your ladyship. It's called tragedy. And it's just that page, that piece of dialogue where you sit and go, ta-da, you know?
Yeah.
That, for me, is probably the book.
That sums up the entire struggle.
Which is why you don't need to see The Restless, which is why all that other stuff is just background noise, you know?
What I'd love to see happen here is like a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen American Vampire.
It's funny you should mention League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Yeah, no, it's funny you should mention League of Extraordinary Gentlemen because there are bits of it that are very similar in the sense that it's got a lot of literary allusions in there. It's set in a similar time to the most recent run, which is League of Extraordinary Gentlemen Century 1910, which is the first of those three.
Yep,
I think it is 1910.
It's 1910.
Yep. Yep. And so it's a contemporary with that. Speaking of which, though, another book that came out this week, which we should look at in the near future, was just a one-shot called Nemo, Heart of Ice, I think it is, which was Alan Moore, just seemingly out of the blue, released a little small hardcover.
Taking a break from Fashion Beast.
Well. Yeah, yeah. It's basically a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen book, but it's a one-shot.
Wow.
So,
Alan Moore just comes out of the woodwork every now and then.
Yeah, he does. He comes out of his cabin.
He actually released two things this week. That, and it was another big photo book called The Unwritten or something. Not The Unwritten.
Lost Girls came out in a paperback.
Paperback as well. So these two new things came out from this week, which was like, I didn't even know they were coming. I don't think anybody knew they were coming.
It's strange for someone that high profile as well.
To not hear about this for months. And just suddenly this Nemo, Heart of Ice or whatever it's called, is out there. It's basically following Nemo's daughter.
Mm.
So that's just really interesting. Just a little sidebar just for people who are interested in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Which I think if you're interested in New Deadwardians, you probably should have a look, I'd say.
I think...
League of... It's a bit hit and miss in some parts, but... Trade volume is definitely worth
picking up. For League, it didn't get as good. The second and third volume, certainly not as
good.
What was
interesting was when the New 52 launched, which is the DC arm of the DC Vertigo line, they actually released two graphic novels at the same time. Three. There was Spaceman.
Yes.
Which came out. There was this. And there was Laveau Voodoo. Oh, what's it called?
Dominic Laveau
Voodoo, whatever.
Voodoo something.
So it's really interesting to see that this is kind of like, this is the modern DC Vertigo.
Yeah.
And I think Vertigo survived a lot better than DC did.
Look, Vertigo's been doing some great stuff. Yeah. Look, we did Punk Rock Jesus a few issues ago, and that was a great example of a great little miniseries that they're doing. They're still doing innovative stuff, and it's not the exclusive domain now of Image to be coming up with Image Comics, to be coming up with interesting creator-owned stuff.
I'll tell you who seems to have fallen by the wayside is Dark Horse. Because Dark Horse, this was their territory as well. Mm. Dark Horse has just seemed to slip away into Buffy.
They seem to have got their two
and
or three.
And they're still writing Hellboy. Sorry about that.
They're still doing Hellboy. They're doing Hellboy in Hell, which is Hellboy written by Mike Mignola at the moment, which is fantastic. I mean, I haven't read it, but it's fantastic to see him back on the book doing writing and illustrating. Mm-hmm. But as you said, they've got Buffy, they've got Angel, they've got Willow, they've got Faith, they've got, you know.
Where's on Star Wars at the moment?
Star Wars is with Dark Horse.
That's with Dark Horse.
And even
though I know there's the Brian Wood one,
and they've just released that new series
with Alex Ross covers.
Alex Ross covers, and they're just selling out across the board. Mm. So if you can get your hands on Star Wars, I mean, apparently they're quite good as well. So
The Star Wars comics just.
Yeah, honestly, for me,
I'm kind of over them.
Extended. I always have a problem the extended universe. I just can't get into with Star Wars. And for me, the universe is the movies. And whenever I watch the movie and go, oh, it's stupid that so-and-so did whatever, and go, well, actually, in the extended universe, you find out that he met with Jade What's-Her-Face and they had a child. It's like, no, but it didn't happen on screen. I don't care.
Yeah, and as wonderful a character as Mara Jade is, because Mara Jade was introduced in the
Thrawn.
Heir to the Empire trilogy, which is a fantastic trilogy. Mm. It's not canon.
Exactly, canon.
You know, and the thing is, if you look at it, you go, the movies, the TV shows, the Clone Wars TV, these are canon. This is produced by Lucasfilm.
Well,
it is canon.
Those first three novels, when they first came out, were the official continuations, but now they seem to have lost their canon status.
Well, they can never be the continuations now because the cast isn't young enough to do them.
Exactly. So, and now, but, you know.
Did you guys pick up the Brian Wood Star Wars?
No.
It was awful.
Really?
Yeah, it was like Princess Leia can fly an X-Wing now, and it's just...
Wow.
Yeah. But the somehow, big twist and revelation at the end was that Darth Vader was in it. You're like,
Somehow she's flown. She's always flown.
I love you, Richard. Come on, let's do it. Let's do it. I love you, Richard.
I know.
Okay, this little love fest is getting uncomfortable.
Who are you calling?
You can just imagine the sequels will have an elderly Han and Leia just sort of sitting there going,
okay, I'll do Han, you do Leia, okay?
Okay.
I love you.
You know? What do you mean you know? Why can you say that to me? What do you mean? You're about to get frozen in carbonite?
Don't wear heels! We don't wear them anymore!
I need a drink. Where's my cocaine?
Electroshock therapy works.
My idea for how it should open is just that it's at his funeral.
What at
Han Solo's funeral? Yeah, and Chewie gives the eulogy.
There you go. <Let's> just...
And that would make a fascinating film, wouldn't it? Because they never subtitled Chewie. Yeah. What him say?
The ghost of Yoda's there. Speech could it was.
Anyway,
were we reviewing a book?
Yeah, Star Wars, right?
Look, let's just say New Dead Wardians, we really enjoyed it. It's great
good.
Read. It's a great period book. It's everything
that
Dan Abnett said
point,
was.
I don't think it's in that must read category, but it's a good book.
It's a good
fun.
Read. As Dan Abnett said in that little long clip I played at the start, it's a horror story. It's a detective story. It's
a love story.
It's a love story, and it's a bit of a fantasy element as well. It's if you like any of those genres, you'll probably enjoy this.
And I'd say if you're used to reading capes every week, then maybe give it a shot. Could be a good introduction.
Stretch your wings a little bit.
I mean,
bit,
there are a few capes in here. It is an Edwardian era, after all. So it's I'm just flicking through plenty of boobs.
Boobs
no nipples,
and
penis.
No nipples. Yeah. No, you're
nipples.
Right.
Yeah. Lots of areola, no nipple.
Yeah, which is I mean, maybe that was a weird side effect of the Restless Plague. all the nipples got unleft.
That's why they had to. That's why they had to shave the teeth.
No, that's why you never see the Restless, because they're just basically giant nipples running around the place.
In Zone R.
Oh,
no, Zone X.
Zone X.
Zone X. That's the red light district, right?
But there, the women are actually normal.
Oh, right? Yeah.
On that bombshell.
It's about feminism, the book.
It's about feminism. Yeah. Well,
there
is
a lot
ways,
of
actually.
Feminist stuff in it. I'm not,
there is. Not,
just
not,
to be clear, we're not like...
We're not. There's a lot of feminism because it is also about the suffragette movement. There aren't giant marauding nipples running around.
Because we just
around.
Spent no, like no, 10 no, minutes no, going, there's lots of nipples. You know? Yeah. Like,
actually, that's actually a very interesting point that is raised, which is the fact that the women are basically...
Women
can't
take the cure.
Why are we given the cure?
Cure, yeah. So it, which draws parallels to why aren't we given the vote. But look, you know, good read, as David said, probably not a must read, but we still recommend it because it is a good, nice break from all the capes that we haven't been reading the last...
if it gets to a
well,
second
no, no,
volume.
We take it back. Yeah. I've been reading.
We've been reading
We just
capes.
Haven't been doing it for
We haven't
sure.
been on the show.
If it gets to a second volume, The New Dead Guardians could be amazing there.
Yeah. I think now that, as you said, he's done an amazing job world building. Now the world's set up, we can just go with
it.
What
we need is a really... intricate mystery next time.
Mm.
One that where we don't have to set up the world anymore, we can just go straight into the mystery and really delve into that.
My
that.
God, who took my glasses?
Maybe he needs Andy Lanning.
Oh, yeah. There's Lanning on there.
And now what we need is we all need a good cup of tea.
Right, before while we go off and have our cup of tea, you've been listening to Behind the Panels, the New Dead Wardians. Now, next issue will be our Behind the Panels 50th episode spectacular. We'll be taking
Michael Caine. Michael Caine. Michael Caine. Come on, finish it with Michael Caine.
We'll be taking a look back at the.
Oh, would you just talk?
We'll be taking a look back at the 49 issues that we've done before the 50th issue spectacular. Kind of look maybe some of the trends in comics we've noticed over the last year, some of our favourite picks. And where we, what we're looking forward to in the next 50 issues of Behind the Panels. After that, of course, we'll
I thought
be
you were going to say in the next 50 issues of 52. No. I was going to say, I'm not looking forward to it.
So you don't have to read anything for next issue, but you, if you want to get ahead, read The Deep, Here Be Dragons and The Deep. Volume 2, which is out from
Vanishing
Island, which is Volume 2. It's by Australian writer Tom Taylor. It's through an Australian distributor called Gestalt, but you can get them through an American distributor as well. So they're certainly available around the world. They're available digitally as well. But we'll be looking at that after next week. Look, in the meantime, if you have some favourite moments or favourite books you'd like us to discuss, complaints, comments, questions about it, hit us up at facebook.com/behindthepanels or feedback.
If you have complaints about the nipple statements, we're not taking
No. Or feedback at behindthepanels.net. Also, we should give you a friendly reminder that you can get the show on iTunes if that's not where you found the show. And if you like the show and you don't have any specific responses to anything we've said, but you just want to leave some general remarks about the show, please leave us a rating on iTunes, a star rating or a comment, because that's how we get further up the iTunes rankings.
We want to get on that featured page.
Exactly right. So until then, this has been Behind the Panels. I've been Richard Gray.
I've been Dave McVeigh.
Dave Longo.
You are.
You are David Longo.
No one can take that away from you. Dave Longo, you can find at damngoodcup.com and on Twitter.
On Twitter at Dave Longo.
There you go. You can find me on behindthepanels.net at
the
moment.
Yes, you can.
Exactly right. You can also find me at DVD Bits on Twitter. And
you can find me at David McVeigh on Twitter or, of course, at the parent company of all of this, which is geekactually.com.
This has been a Geek Actually production.
So thank you to everybody who's been listening. We'll see you all in a week.
In 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks.
Still 2 weeks.
For
our 50th episode spectacular.
Yes.